Welcome to the Joe Make School Radio Podcast, and I'm sitting here with, remain anonymous, because we got super secret fucking shit that we're talking about. Either way, we were talking about this kind of thing that's going on with the politic thing, and I think it's kind of interesting. I was trying to relate what's going on with the Mueller investigation to the Nixon administration. I'm sorry. Every time that I record, I talk a little bit louder. But either way, so if you want a secret super code name, go ahead and think of one. It'd be awesome.
I'll just go by the name Casino.
I like Casino. So we got Casino here. I got to get that down in my mind. Okay. All right. So again, to recap, we were talking about the idea that, like, Watergate happened with Nixon, right?
It did.
It did happen with Nixon.
It most certainly did.
Can you recap that in, like, 5 sentences? For people that don't know what Watergate was?
Watergate was a break-in to the Democratic National Headquarters, orchestrated by members within the Republican Party. However, the sitting president at the time, Richard Nixon, who was a Republican, did not order, nor was he aware of the break-in. The fruits of the break-in did end up in Nixon's possession. Instead of at that point stopping it dead in its tracks and revealing what happened, Nixon proceeded to utilize and ultimately cover up the fact that he had information from this break-in, which was, in fact, an attack, even though it's not a violent attack like a bombing. It was an attack against the opposition party.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so can you sum up in 5 sentences what happened just recently?
Trying to compare this to Donald Trump and the Mueller investigation, there's one big difference, as demonstrated by the conclusions in the Mueller report. All the accusations against Trump that he and Putin had colluded together, that it was a big conspiracy to prevent Hillary Clinton from winning, to install, in essence, a puppet president under the control of Vladimir Putin, have been shown by the Mueller investigation that it never happened. It was what it was when it was first introduced by Hillary Clinton after she lost, a fantasy. It was an excuse.
Okay.
Richard Nixon was actually guilty of committing crimes. He did. And the Republican members of the Senate at that time realized that Richard Nixon had in fact committed crimes, covering up illegal activities, utilizing the fruits of those illegal activities.
Yeah.
And they were actually the final say, because you need 2/3, 67 votes in the Senate to actually impeach and remove someone, convict them in a Senate trial.
So, like, Nixon was going after the opposition party.
Well, he didn't direct or order the initial break-in.
Uh-huh.
But when the, quote, fruits of those events ended up in his possession, he utilized them and ultimately covered up the fact that he had them and was utilizing them. And the Republican members at the time in the Senate were the ones that finally went to Nixon in September, roughly, of 1974 and said to him, you're going to be impeached. It's going to end up in the Senate. There'll be a trial. You'll be convicted. There will be 2/3 and beyond of the Senate that will vote to convict in the Senate trial. At that point, you would be impeached, forced from office, and subject to all kinds of criminal ramifications.
That's crazy.
Well, that's what happened.
Casino, calm it down there. Now, again, let's recap too what we were talking about before recording, right? And apologize for the audio because it's just off my phone. I will get the equipment set up eventually, but I want to get an idea of when you started learning this kind of stuff, when, like, the attitude of the country, like, it wasn't split when Nixon was, like, when this was going on. It wasn't, I mean, you, Casino grew up in Chicago, so it was it, like, totally on one side or totally off the other side?
Two thoughts to keep for background on that question. One is, in 1972, when he ran for re-election against George McGovern, Richard Nixon was re-elected in a landslide. It was an overwhelming victory against McGovern. However, Watergate followed a long-term investment that the United States had made, starting with the Kennedy administration, in a place called Vietnam. The Kennedy administration entered the United States into that conflict. After Kennedy's assassination, his vice president, Johnson, became president.
So there was people, I'm sorry to cut you off, but there was, like, from what I've, like, looked up and whatever, and just what people have told me, like, Vietnam was fucked up. Like, the whole country didn't want it.
That's true. The majority of the country viewed the conflict in Vietnam as unworthy, improper. It gave rise to issues regarding the draft.
I love you. Me and Dave, me and Casino are doing a podcast.
Okay.
You too.
It gave rise to legal issues regarding draft matters during an undeclared wartime. It spawned. It was actually one of the primary nucleuses that would actually spawn the culture of the 60s, the counterculture, as it was called at the time. But trying to draw a connection to modern day, we hear today about how there's media bias.
Yeah. Well,
it was, in fact, the Kennedy administration that entered the United States into Vietnam. It was Lyndon Johnson that continued the commitment after Kennedy's assassination. Once Richard Nixon was elected in 1968 and defeated Johnson, all of a sudden it became Nixon's war, Vietnam. It was as if the prior 5-6 years had never occurred. And the party that was in power, the Democratic Party, and its leaders, Lyndon Johnson, and prior to that, John Kennedy, had nothing to do with it. So Nixon was already tagged and tarred for Vietnam prior to Watergate. Even with that tar, he was able to win re-election in a overwhelming fashion, a total landslide in 72. But the country was weary and tired, and when Watergate broke...
Wait, when you say weary and tired, it means, like, people just don't want to fucking hear about it. It's like the policies are going against what you want. And it's like, this sounds so... Like, it affects fucking individuals, because, like, what you're talking about is, like, Vietnam and shit, right?
Well, right, Vietnam.
So it's, like, affecting your fucking parents, your fucking... You're seeing it in the community.
It, in some ways...
Literally?
It tore families apart.
Like, my uncle went to Vietnam. He was over there. My grandpa was in World War II and shit like that. Like, it affects community. Like, people are gone.
It turned brother against brother. You had two brothers sitting across the dinner table. One felt compelled. I've got to go register for the draft. I've got to go if called. You had on the other side of the table his brother looking at him going, first of all, you can't administer a draft legally unless it's a declared war. Vietnam was never a declared war.
I did not know that.
That's true.
That's weird. But there was still a draft.
They did.
Are you serious? Is that true?
It's absolutely true.
I never knew that. I don't know shit about Vietnam.
By federal law, a draft can only be implemented during a time of war.
That is incredible.
And that
but they still just was like, fuck that, draft them motherfuckers. Like,
that's true.
Even if you don't want to go. Wait, how did the draft work? It was like, if you're the oldest son,
it was
youngest son?
Selective service. They tried to not take entire families. Yes,
entire families.
Older children. Sure, you didn't want to take three brothers.
Like mom, dad, fucking.
Potentially.
To the over there? Jesus Christ. I thought it was just like.
Anyone between the ages of 18 and I believe it was 42 was compelled to be part of. To register and then in potentially could have been drawn.
42 years old and 364 days. No, 41 years old and 364 days. It's like, man, I've had enough of this shit.
There were
it's my last day. I'm getting too old for this shit. Well, and you might possibly get drafted? That's fucked up, dude.
There were various exemptions that you could present and that could exclude you or remove you from the process. But, yeah, and it was a difficult time. But what people forget and is very important is Vietnam started in 1963.
Yeah.
And I'm not playing politics by saying this. This is a recorded historical fact. It was a Democratic administration, the Kennedy administration, that entered the United States into this conflict. Upon his assassination, his vice president, Lyndon Johnson, became president from 63 through 68, where, at that point, Richard Nixon, a member of the Republican Party, was elected. At that point, even though from 63 to 68 there were concerns in the country about doing this, once Richard Nixon became elected in 68, the media portrayed it as Nixon's war.
Mm.
Or Nixon's conflict, whatever term you want to use. It was as if, well, let's put it this way. They knew what had gone on in the five prior years. They knew how we'd gotten into this mess.
Uh-huh.
But all of a sudden, none of this mattered. It was now, this is Nixon's deal.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
So Nixon battled this from 68 through 72, and Nixon tried to win it, failed miserably. Ultimately, it was a fiasco. It led to horrific episodes where we had service men and women returning to the United States. They were spit on, chastised by the public.
We've all seen Forrest Gump.
Horrific. Just horrific. But even against that backdrop, when he ran for re-election in 72...
Yeah, what a slap in the face. It's like, yeah, get over there. And then, yeah. Because that was like growing up. I'm 34, so I don't... I mean, I've heard about that kind of stuff, but I've never lived through it where it's like even people coming back. I've had buddies go over in like the Afghanistan war. They've been there. Iraq. They've been there. No way in hell that they would come back and they would get like shit about it. It's
no.
Like, no, man. I would fucking like shit. I don't even want to bring it up with you because
the first
you might be fucked up a little bit.
The first major conflict the United States entered into,
yeah,
after Vietnam, actually was when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait.
Yes, yeah.
And if there is a silver lining in everything that happened during the Vietnam years and the horrible treatment that the service men and women got when they came back, is that between that period and when the United States, under George Bush's presidency, decided that Hussein's invasion of Kuwait was not going to be, to use his term, tolerated.
Word.
There was a learned and instinctive reaction, both in play within the United States, that whatever your views politically on the situation, that we separated it from the men and women.
Mm.
Which We failed that during Vietnam.
Yeah.
We let our personal and political views of what was going on transfer to the men and women in uniform, which was a horrible stain on the United States. Thank God, some 18 years, 20 years later, whatever it was at that point, we had realized that and woke up from it and were able to separate the political and philosophical individual views from admiration and honoring our men and women in service. The country itself, coming out of Vietnam, it had now become Nixon's war, and then Watergate broke. Nixon was guilty, plain and simple.
Right, right, right.
If the Republican members in the Senate, who had a choice at that point, they could have said, you know what, yes, you did, but we're going to play party politics, and we're going to cover your ass, and you'll be fine. If they had done that, they would have set a precedent starting in 1973 that would still be in place today.
Sure.
That would have said, unequivocally, you can conduct yourself in this way, commit these criminal acts, and it's okay.
Yeah.
It would be, in essence, putting a rubber stamp on complete abuse of power and the ability to use the power of an office to cover up crimes. And the Republican leaders at the time in the Senate said, we can't set that precedent going forwards.
Yeah.
Which, if you transition that thought to today, the Mueller report proves unequivocally that Donald Trump absolutely did not collude with anyone. If there's no collusion, there's no cover-up, there's no obstruction. In essence, everything he was accused of, he never did.
Yeah. Also, I want to make it very clear, though, I'm not a cheerleader for Donald Trump.
This isn't about Donald Trump.
I'm not a cheerleader for anybody, to be honest with you.
It's not.
I think that there should be people elected to get in there, not on a popular, like, you know, oh, they're good looking or anything like that, or charismatic. No. I would like people that get in there on policies. I'm not a cheerleader. I'm not saying, like, rah, rah, I want this motherfucker to do whatever. Because that's not how that shit works. And that's not the idea of the Constitution when it was fucking written. And I think a lot of people fucking went away from that. I don't even know if they teach that shit in the school or what the fuck is going on. I have no idea. But it seems like now it's like just a big, did you like this show? Did you like this show or not? Because if you didn't like it, oh, we're going to have problems.
The question that now has to be asked and has to be resolved is, we know unequivocally from the Mueller report that the sitting attorney general, under the prior administration of Barack Obama, the prior sitting director of the FBI under the Obama administration, CIA director, countless FBI agents, CIA agents, law enforcement agents.
Wait, when you say countless, you get it.
We don't know how many.
Right.
We know the numbers are many.
And just for the sake of just saying this, like, because a lot of people are maybe flagged, not just flagged. Okay, they're flagged for sure. It's like, okay, well, your name. You know, there will be names that will be named.
How did a FISA court get presented with a document? That was bought and paid for by the Democrat at the time.
Explain the FISA.
The FISA court was initially formed.
It's an acronym for what is it? Foreign Investigation
Surveillance Actions Court. It is designed.
Wait, say that one more time, just for the listeners.
Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Actions Court. What it's designed.
That's the FISA court. Okay.
It actually came into existence after the 9/11 attacks.
Mm-hmm.
The whole purpose of the FISA court was prior to 9/11, the United States intelligence agencies were hamstrung from communicating and coordinating with each other and monitoring...
Wait! Describe hamstrung.
You couldn't share information. You
What's could... hamstrung, though?
Hamstrung means you're handcuffed. Your hands are tied behind your back.
Oh, hamstrung. Oh, I get it. Like this. Like,
you're
what do they call that in Wisconsin? The,
Hogtied.
Hogtied! Thank you, Dave. You kept on saying that, like, oh, he's hamstrung.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's ham. Yeah, okay. All right, go ahead.
You're unable to communicate between agencies. You're unable to monitor activities of people that were in this country due to the current laws and statutes of the time and regulations governing these agencies. Well, the FISA court was set up that after 9/11, that if there was a reason to believe someone was in this country communicating with known terrorists, or outside of this country communicating with known terrorists, the FISA court could be approached with evidence that such activities were going on and could grant the ability to the agencies collectively in the federal government, from the National Security Agency to the Central Intelligence Agency to military agencies to the CIA, to monitor these folks and what they were up to. It was designed as a way to defend against a threat that still exists today. We're going to pause for a minute. But a question, real quick, a question that has to be asked at this point is, how did a dossier, a document that was created on the then Republican nominee for President of the United States, Donald Trump, that was bought, irrefutably bought and paid for, designed and orchestrated by the nominee of the Democratic Party at the time, Hillary Clinton.
Wait, Biden paid for it.
Absolutely, through Fusion GPS.
Yeah, right. So there's
no question about
from,
this.
Right.
No question.
So
it's
like, hey. So let's break this down, too. Let's break it down nice and simple.
Who then dealt with Russian and British agents.
Let's use Simpsons characters. You know the Simpsons, right?
Bart and Homer and them cats.
Okay, let's see. We got Bart, Maggie.
No.
Marge.
Marge, yeah.
Marge. Marge is who? The mom.
Yeah, she
is. Homer's the dad.
That's correct.
And we got
Bart, the little one.
Yeah, we got Moe, the bartender. Yeah. All that shit. Okay.
Yep.
All right, let's break down bought and paid for. Okay. So let's put Barack Obama as Homer, right?
It's hard to envision any scenario
where
the sitting director of the FBI, the Attorney General, Director of CIA, Director of NSA could ever possibly have taken a document that was designed to implicate the candidate nominee of the opposition party for President of the United States.
Yeah.
Took it to a FISA court, presented it to a FISA court as certain fact of matter to initiate the FISA court's reaction of allowing the wiretapping and surveillance, not only of the individual Donald Trump, but his family, friends, and associates.
Wait, define FISA again?
FISA.
What's the first name?
FISA again.
First
is a
name.
Foreign.
FISA is my first name.
FISA.
It's spelled FISA.
FISA is designed entirely.
Yeah, the first
entirely.
Name is Foreign. Foreign.
That's correct. That is why within the dossier it was portrayed that the Trump campaign,
yeah,
Trump himself, his associates, family, friends, people working on the campaign were colluding with a foreign government, in this case, Vladimir Putin and Russia, because it allowed, at that point, for the FISA court to be presented with a false document, portrayed as a factual document, to get a rubber stamp out of the FISA court to initiate the surveillance and wiretapping that went on against Trump, his family, his friends, his associates.
Well done, sir.
That's how they did it.
I am super shocked. Man.
That's simply how they did it.
You should set up your own little podcast. You'd fucking love that shit.
The problem...
Just spew fucking words into there.
The problem is, at this point...
No. Your words make sense to me. I've been following this for a long time. I like it. Because it's interesting to me. And it's fucked up. Like, what's going on right now is fucked up. And I don't think it's going to get blown over.
Certainly Trump.
Yeah.
And the people around him feel vindicated and knew all along they were innocent, and they knew they were being set up. But that's not the point at this point.
Yeah.
The point at this point is, just like back with Nixon during Watergate, it was the Republicans in Senate who went to Nixon and said, we will not back this. We will not allow this. You've got to go. The question is, who are the Democrats today that are going to step forwards and go back to Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Brennan, Comey,
Page, Strzok, and say,
you know what? We can't let this precedent be set either.
Right.
Because none of this was ever true.
So what's happening right now is like, I get this. I run kind of a raunchy podcast, so I'm gonna put it out there like this. It's like, look, did you fuck my wife? My wife said that you fucked her. Yeah, you fucked my wife. That's fine, you know? And the wife was like, yeah, I did fuck him. I did fuck him. And then, in the end, she's fessing up like, no, I didn't fuck him at all. I didn't fuck him. It's like, oh, really? You're fucking me on that? Ah. Terrible. Absolutely terrible.
All we heard...
It's a lot of miscommunication. Well, not miscommunications or whatever, but it's a bunch of bullshit. Try to relate it to... try to relate it to something other than, like, just names and shit. Because I'm just starting to come around to, like, understanding what the fuck happened. It's like... I'm going to... let's say Casino over here is going to fuck Sarah, right? And...
I wouldn't do that.
Right. But for the sake of trying to... Wait. Let's try to put this in perspective. Let's honestly sit down and think about this. Okay. Now, I'm trying to... Well, you got to think like a presidential run, right? Let's take this down a notch. Let's take it down to the point of I am a worker at a ice cream shop, right? And I'm trying to get into manager status, right?
Got it.
You will basically... fuck with my whole family and tell them that you will make up a bunch of, like, rumors and shit about me, right? Okay, that's the Steele dossier. That's one. That's, you're going to kick that up. You're going to kick that up at the ice cream parlor?
The Steele dossier.
Bro, come on.
We're not talking word of mouth here. The Steele dossier was presented as a legal finding, a document of fact.
Yeah. Dave, Steve, Keith, Phil, Casino.
A document of fact.
We can all get... All right, let's try to break this down into a very simple kind of a form. Okay? Very, very simple form.
That's the problem with this situation.
It is difficult, isn't it?
The complexity of it is what prevents the truth about what happened from truly being identified and investigated and revealed.
Yeah.
That's the problem with this.
Ah, I'll show you Between Two Ferns later with the Hillary Clinton interview, which is hilarious, by the way. And I recommend whoever is still listening at this point, because you guys probably fucking turned it off, but that's fine. Dave has a very soothing voice. I love Dave. Fuck, Casino, whatever. Whatever, man. You guys don't even know who the fuck he is. It's fine.
The president, the sitting president of the United States, Barack Obama.
I want like an analogy. Like, if people knew what the fuck was going on, if it was like a simple analogy, like your boss threw you under the bus or something like that. It was like, okay, well, it's really hard to explain. It really is.
There really isn't a simple metaphor to draw this against, because what you had was an originating point with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
Yes.
That was then dished off to subordinates and people that, on the surface, appear to have no connection to anyone.
Okay, right. Okay, all right. So let's start off.
They go out and do the dirty work.
Let's try to form this. Let's try to form this, okay? We'll use an ice cream stand, okay? Ice cream stand is the equivalent of the United States of America, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right? There is not an owner on the United States of America or whatever, but for the sake of trying to simplify this, we will go ahead and say that there is an owner for this ice cream stand. Okay? We're not going to say Obama. We're going to say, we'll say Mr. A. How about that? Okay? Mr. A is the president of the United States, right? And his term was up. But before Mr. A, lease. How about that? Okay? He leased the building, the ice cream stand. Because we have to simplify this, okay? I don't think that people know what the fuck is going on. So,
to try to simplify this, you have to add in one more element.
Oh, no. We'll get there. Hold on.
Stand in the apartment. Before that ice cream stand was there, mm-hmm. there was a gyro stand first.
Right.
The gyro stand was actually, by replacing it with the ice cream stand, the whole purpose of the ice cream stand at that point wasn't to sell ice cream. It was so that nobody would ever remember or look into the gyro stand.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Not really. I mean, it kind of does. God damn it. I wish somebody made, like, a little cartoon. Anyways, so the ice cream stand was owned by Barack Obama. We'll call Mr. A, right? And Mr. A, the lease was up. And he had to get in somebody in there, right? When you get somebody in there, you don't get to vet them. You don't get to understand them or whatever. It's just like, whoever wants to be in there and can do the job, and we'll take a vote. Sure. Okay, so in that voting process, what happened is there was a couple people vying for the ice cream stand, and instead of just saying, like, you know, may the best man win, they're like, fuck that guy. I'm going to go over to his house and peek in his windows and shit like that. And I'm going to find out whatever. I mean, shit. Not to get too specific or whatever, but I could have a bunch of my buddies just go ahead and make friends with them, and it would be easy capeasy to fucking go in and say, like, yo, you want to buy that ice cream stand? You do? Ah, that's cool. All right. Well, we're going to listen to you. We're going to hear you out on if you want to buy that ice cream stand.
If you want to start to solve this Rubik's Cube, and that's what it is.
It's a hard motherfucking thing to understand.
The first question, and arguably the most important question in solving the Rubik's Cube, is this.
I wonder how it's going to get written down.
Why did Barack Obama want Hillary Clinton to win so bad?
Mystery.
Why did he want her to win so bad? He wanted to win so bad. Why? That he was willing to take all the powers of the executive branch centered in the Oval Office, the agencies directly under him, DOJ, FBI, CIA, NSA, and turn them against the sitting opposition candidate.
Yeah.
Why? This is to begin the foundation question that has to be answered to solve this Rubik's Cube is very simple. Why did Barack Obama want Hillary Clinton to win so bad that he corroborated and colluded with her in turning the powers of the federal government against a Republican nominee by the name of Donald J. Trump? Why? And that question isn't answerable by, well, he wanted a Democrat to win.
Wait, you don't think that gun was loaded towards any of them? If there was, like, a candidate that would come, like, whoever would get the nominee. Donald Trump was a joke, dude. That was a joke.
Doesn't matter. The question is,
way back in the day, like, nobody took him fucking serious.
It doesn't matter.
And it came up.
It doesn't matter.
And then, like, it wouldn't matter. That's what I'm saying. Matter. Like, the gun was loaded.
It doesn't matter if Hillary Clinton.
Do you think that the gun was loaded towards,
let's say Ted Cruz had been the Republican
nominee. The ice cream stand.
This guy is everything that Donald Trump is. He's somebody that you would expect to see in that position. He's been in politics his whole life. Whatnot.
Sure. Right. He won Wisconsin.
The difference between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump isn't the fact that one has a political background, one doesn't. One's in building and business, and the other one practiced politics his whole life.
Dick size.
The key difference between if Ted Cruz had been the nominee versus Donald Trump being the nominee is that Donald Trump was very concerned about certain aspects of Barack Obama's history.
Oh, all right.
Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Jeb Bush, they're plastic politicians, professional politicians. They had no interest in any of that. In fact, anytime any questions were raised by Donald Trump, or anybody else for that matter, regarding certain concerns regarding Barack Obama, they were mocked and insulted. The idea that you would bring up any questions regarding any of this opens you to criticism and ridicule.
Yeah.
The key question to the Rubik's Cube of the whole, why did a dossier get created under false pretenses to follow a script that wasn't written in Russia, wasn't written in Britain, it was written in the United States under Hillary Clinton's guidance. And then farmed out to be created with the aid of other people overseas, and then brought back so that, like Pontius Pilate, my hands are clean, I didn't do it.
Right.
and then taken this document to the CIA, to the FBI, to the Department of Justice, ultimately to a FISA court, presented as irrefutable proof.
Foreign.
Even though there was
foreign intelligence.
Ever, under any circumstance, none, to substantiate anything in the dossier itself.
Yeah.
This involved, in order for this to happen,
I think the most fucked up thing so far has been like
the top players at the
foreign,
top
foreign intelligence. Involved. Foreign intelligence.
Sure. That That's, we're gonna blame the Russians. The Russians did it. Putin did it. Because by doing this, you now open the door to get into the FISA courts secret and they're silent. They're behind closed doors.
The whole point.
They're intended to be that way. They're the perfect asset and vehicle for this kind of sham.
I know. In hindsight, it's pretty easy to say this kind of shit. The whole point of this podcast, though, was to be able to... I wanted to know what the feelings were like back when like Vietnam and shit was going on.
The feelings in 1976 when Jimmy Carter came out of nowhere to win the presidency, even though the backdrop is different, were very similar to 2016 when Trump came out of nowhere against all odds to win. The country, coming out of Watergate, coming out of Vietnam, was torn, it was frayed, it was tired. Jimmy Carter presented someone who had nothing to do with any of this as an amicable fellow who wanted to start afresh and take the country in a better direction and try to bring people together. Trump, after the...
God damn it, Dave, you need to start your own podcast, dude. Trump, I would subscribe immediately.
Trump, after the 8 years of Obama...
You have a lot of stuff on your mind.
It's very similar to to the time when Carter came out. The country was torn and frayed after 8 years of Obama. Incomes go down. There were controversies on numerous things, cultural things that developed.
We'll do three more minutes.
The country in 2016 had a choice between taking a known figure in Hillary Clinton, all the history involving her and her husband, former President Bill Clinton, and putting that back in power, or taking an individual that brought a different look, a stronger look to this country, that told this country point blank, it doesn't matter, red, white, black, blue, green, yellow.
Sure.
What have you got to lose? We're going the wrong direction. We need to change this.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter did the same thing. He took the years of Vietnam and Watergate and said, we're going the wrong direction. It doesn't matter what color, what creed, whatever you believe, it doesn't matter. We can't continue what we're doing. We need to change what we're doing.
Mm.
It's... You hear this a lot of times, change versus status quo in elections. But they became very prominent during Carter's run. And it's really what Trump built his run to the White House on. That what we're doing isn't working. We're going backwards. We're losing status. We're losing personal income. We're losing stability. And that's not who we are.
Okay. Well, I guess on that note, if you guys are still listening, it wasn't a very funny one, but thanks for listening again. And I will make a new format. It will be not political. It'll be just me and my idiot friends. And I will try to make them mad as possible. And what, see how that works out.
One last thing.
Yep. Get it, Casino.
One last thing on the whole dossier surveillance of Trump issue.
Yep.
And this is a very serious point that has got to be considered by everyone as citizens of this country.
Sure.
When a false document is created, presented as a formal document, all the authorities of the federal government accept this, manipulate it, presented to the public is fact, presented to a FISA court is fact. It turns out to be what it was to begin with, a complete fantasy. You now have numerous crimes that have been broken. Numerous crimes. Laws broken all over the place during this process. Roughly 45, 50 years ago, the question was, would you allow Nixon and what he did, which was illegal, to become precedent and allowable in the United States? The answer back then was no. The reality is, if at this point, the turning of all federal powers against any individual, let alone the nominee of the opposition party, on false, knowingly false pretenses, is allowed to become precedent, it doesn't matter going forwards if it's a Democrat president, a Republican president, maybe someday an independent as president. If the precedent is set and it's okay for the sitting president to turn the powers of the federal government against the opposition party nominee or any other innocent citizen of the United States, where do we go from there?
And on that note, good night, folks.